Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Yes, we are late this week, but for good reason and bad news. Waiting for the final game of Venezuela's September triple date of World Cup qualifiers for Qatar 2022. Unfortunately, the dream is all but over. Three games played and no points earned. Losses to Argentina in Caracas, followed by Peru and Paraguay on the road, have all but confirmed any possibility of going to Qatar is over. Venezuela sit bottom of the group in dramatic fashion after Jose Pesero resigned less than 2 weeks before the game against Argentina to be replaced on an interim basis by Deportivo Lara manager Leo González. Dominic, it's a hammer blow of epic proportions and probably leaves Venezuela with another 12 months of uncertainty. The federation said that they wanted to hire a coach of international caliber, almost certainly a foreigner, to take over Venezuela from here on. But with half of the World Cup qualifying campaign still to play and no Copa America next year, is there really going to be an international manager of international caliber that is going to want to take over the federation, the national team, sorry, when there is probably not a meaningful game to occur for Venezuela for over 12 months? Or am I being dramatic? Is there still a chance that Venezuela could qualify? And how?
Yeah, you know, I do think that'll obviously be significantly harder to attract a high-level coach, given how things went this month. At the same time, I don't know if I see it as negatively. As you noted, this is more or less a halfway point. And so as much as I agree that like the World Cup feels incredibly far away now, it maybe worth grounding ourselves a little bit and like, well, we're about 50% of the way. That's not far. That's not that much. And there are a lot of games left. And you know, we're not mathematically disqualified. So while I completely agree that, you know, the chances are not realistic, there are probably, you know, managers out there who have maybe already had accomplishments in their career and are maybe kind of past that initial need to just get somewhere secure, that might be interested in a challenge, might be interested in something that feels a little bit like an underdog situation and a difficult hill. There are certainly plenty of managers that search for that at a certain point in their career. So I imagine that would be the kind of person that they're trying to get. But yeah, you know, whoever it is, they will be handed a really difficult situation. One that's very different than what both of us were hoping for. I joked in the last podcast about getting all 9 points, and I never thought that was going to happen. But I did see a real chance for 4 points, maybe even 6 points, out of this window, and clearly that didn't happen. That was very disappointing. Maybe we'll talk more about the way that all happened. But I'll stay positive at the very least that they'll be able to attract somebody who will be interested in that challenge, interested in, you know, working with the players that hopefully will be available for the next window, players that play in a variety of leagues, including some substantial leagues. And whoever it is, hopefully it's someone that has the ambition to say, well, look, let's try. Let's see if we can get a couple wins in the next window. If I recall correctly, we play 3 games in the next window again. And you know, see what they can make of that, and keep fingers crossed. But yeah, I agree that it's unlikely. Not that it's unlikely. I think it's going to be a lot harder. I think it's going to be a lot harder to recruit this anonymous person, because you know, they're going to be in a much deeper hole than the federation expected. If we had even gotten like 2 draws out of this window, or 1 win, 2 losses, and just had a couple extra points. 6 or 7 instead of 4 where we're at, Yeah, I think they would have made it much easier. But, you know, this is a situation. The Federation certainly needs to put somebody, with all due respect to our interim coach, Gonzalez, who I respect and who I was, you know, I thought deserved a shot. It obviously didn't go well. Not all his fault by any means, but it seems pretty clear that, you know, that's not like a long-term solution. So they're going to have to figure it out. And they're going to have to find somebody who, again, is just really willing to take on a huge challenge, one that is not guaranteed to them, or where success is not guaranteed to them.
And you talk about it not being Gonzalez's fault or not all his fault, and it certainly isn't. And let's talk about some of those incidents that ultimately contributed to a disastrous 0 points from nine. And ultimately, that begins with Adrian Martinez getting sent off in the first half of the first game. Hosting Argentina in Caracas is already a tough ask. The fanfare around Leo Messi playing in Venezuela, something he hadn't done for around 10 years, was the big pandemonium, the fanfare going into the game. And then Venezuela start all right. Like, they're on the back foot. The surface doesn't seem to be on their side, but they're holding off. They're doing all right. And then we get the injury to Sema Velasquez. He goes off injured, replaced by Adrian Martinez or Luis Martinez. And a couple of minutes later, a missed time challenge, he's been admonished for, but it was not malicious. It was just a mistimed challenge. He's a gangly kind of player anyway, so it looks worse than his intentions would have been. Comes in on Messi hard, and Venezuela are down to 10 men, and he's replaced by Mikel Villanueva. But then Venezuela continued to do okay. He didn't concede a penalty. The foul was outside the box, and with less than 60 seconds to go until halftime, it's still 0-0. Of course, the second half was always going to be difficult, let alone with 10 men. But then the sucker punch. Argentina get their goal just before halftime, and it completely changes the halftime team talk for Gonzalez. He had already had to take Eric Ramirez off, the striker who was making his first start for Venezuela, up top against Josef Martinez following the red card. And then he changed again and came out in the second half in what Venezuela fans have become accustomed to, a back five. Daniel Carrillo, who's been playing his football in Finland this season, was at left back. Oscar Gonzalez, predominantly a left back playing left-sided centre back. And then Mikel Villanueva and Ferraresi joining him as the centre back three, and Alexander Gonzalez at right back. So it was clear from then on it was going to be damage limitation. And ultimately, they did okay with that. Like, the game finished 3-1. It wasn't an embarrassment. And the highlight for me, as someone that was going to their first Venezuela game live in the flesh, 3 weeks or so after I arrived in Venezuela, an amazing moment. Jefferson Sotelo wins a penalty. The drama of VAR, is it going to be given? Is it not? Like, we all lambast VAR when it's on TV and we're waiting for the decisions and it's killing the moment when a goal's been scored. But that release when the referee points to the spot and gives the penalty, and then it's just like, is he going to score? And Soteldo, after a great 90 minutes, and how often do we see Soteldo complete a full 90 minutes for Venezuela? He steps up to take it himself, and with all of the cheek in the world, penenkas it against Emiliano Martinez and gets the goal. Of course, it's still a loss, but for me, that was a small silver lining of the night. Like I said, the first time I'd seen Vinotinto live, and Soteldo, a player that was so influential in me gaining an interest in Venezuelan football, getting the goal just made the moment for me. How was it watching it at home? Because obviously, you get the replays on the tackle. When Martinez went in, there's no screen showing replays at El Olimpico, so. To me, it didn't look too bad. Obviously, I've seen the replays and it was, but you know, those moments at home when you saw the replays, like, were there moments that could have gone differently? Or 3-1 is ultimately a fair reflection, of course, but how was it? What's your opinion on that first game?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with the red card incident, just as it's sort of what you ended on there. When obviously it happened, I'm watching on TV, so it's kind of all zoomed out, so it's kind of hard to see detail. The first angle that the broadcast showed was, I guess I would describe it as it was sort of from. So almost from like a midfield line perspective, like it was from behind Messi kind of, and from that angle, it actually looked like nothing. It, for some reason, the angle it just really hid most of what happened. You'd see that they touched each other, but it didn't really look that serious. And then I saw an angle or two that was kind of like almost from the goal and then from the side, and then you could see that it was really actually a really atrocious foul. And like you said, obviously Martinez did not intend to harm him, but it was truly a really, really poor tackle, and an unfortunate for a player that had really impressed at the Copa America and just, I don't know, just had a moment. Obviously he hadn't been on the field too long at that point. Maybe he wasn't clear in the head yet, wasn't in the motion of the game yet. But yeah, when I first saw the first angle I saw, I was thinking, oh, well, that doesn't look that bad. And then you see the other angles, and I immediately was thinking to myself, or talking out loud, like, oh, this is going to be a sending off. There's no way that he's going to stay on the field after that. So that was very unfortunate. The game as a whole, like you said, we started pretty okay. The maybe 10, 15 minutes were pretty okay, look kind of back and forth, and I want to say we created a chance or two. There were, however, and this is going to unfortunately be a theme for the entire three matches. There were a lot of moments that were kind of flabbergasting, I guess is the word. Just moments where players just made wrong decisions, didn't, I don't, maybe were overthinking. Just consistently, we're not doing themselves any favors. When we did get the ball into the box, a lot of times the handling of, where do I place the final pass or do I take the shot or, those sorts of things was just silly at times. It just, very, very wasteful. Something that we just simply couldn't do with the conditions of that game. The penalty at the end was nice to have, and when it became clear that VAR was going to handle it, I was saying out loud, like, just give it, it's not going to matter in terms of, the actual result, just let it happen. Of course, after Soteldo scored, we actually had like a counterattack that almost kind of created a chance, so maybe it could have spurred something, but yeah, I mean, it was nice to have a goal. Obviously that makes it feel a little better. It makes it feel a little more competitive. At the same time, like you said, Soteldo, I think that game was one of his stronger ones actually. But as much as I want to say how great that was, a great note to end the game on, I don't know if it really means anything, and I don't know if I should allow myself to pretend it means anything to score a fun penalty at the end of a game where the entire team failed to really make much of anything. It's a tough one. It's one of those losses that's hard to kind of process a full recap of because there's so many asterisks. Of course, the card, the red card, the injuries, Ramirez, of course, not being able to play anywhere close to a full game because of the change in formation. So, that was always the game that I imagine everybody thought we would probably, drop points at for sure. And so, in that sense, after it, I was not too concerned. But retrospectively, having watched all three games, I do see things in that game, the wasting of chances, the lack of flow in passes. The silly mistakes, including, the red card. I do see those things and realize, like, well, these were predictions or these were teasers of themes that would exist in the other two games. And so perhaps now I think a little harsher of how we played that game. At the same time, it was great to, I mean, the fact that fans could go to the game and watch that whole, the fact that any of that happened was great to see. I guess that was the silver lining for me.
Yeah, to address what you said about Soteldo first, for me that was just a personal highlight. It doesn't detract from the disappointment at all of the loss, although, you know, we were, I think most people of course were expecting to lose to Argentina, and it felt like game over. The people sat around me, it felt like game over when Martinez got sent off. You know, the resignation was palpable in the air. People's shoulders slumped, and it was very disappointing in that moment. And again, like I said, with no replays, it was hard to judge in the moment. But my dad stayed up late in England, and just to stress for anyone listening, my dad isn't Venezuelan. None of my family are at all. But he's fully got behind following Venezuela since Football English, since I wrote the book, since I did myself in 2017. He messaged me from England, staying up late to watch, saying that Martinez, it seemed like he was in tears when he left the pitch. But let's not dwell on the Argentina game too much, because there's more to dwell on, unfortunately. And for me, the second game, the loss to Peru in Lima, was the most disappointing, because I feel like, again, like I said, the defeat against Argentina was expected. And Paraguay, I know that, you know, and we tweeted this week that Paraguay is the only country we've beaten away from home in competitive fixtures for twice in 23 games. They're the only two games that Venezuela have won on the road in competitive fixtures. But I still felt like Peru was the game to get something from. I know Lapadula is a very good striker and Tapia is a good midfielder. But just as a team, I feel like Venezuela are, in the moment, that was the opportunity. I know so much went on off the field to hinder Venezuela, but I felt like that was the game to get 3 points from if there was going to be one. And then anything from Paraguay would have been a bonus. You know, aim for a draw and try and get more. But that's not how it worked out. And it was a really, really disappointing 1-0 loss to Peru. But I said let's move on from the Argentina game, but I quickly just wanted to say I was very, very impressed with Oscar Gonzalez across this triple date, but particularly on his debut against Argentina. I think him alongside Soteldo and Brujo Martinez were outstanding. And I think over the three dates, Oscar Gonzalez could probably hold his head up as the most consistent performer. Brujo Martinez was very good against Argentina and then dropped for Peru. And of course, Peru was another game where we suffered from a red card. Thomas Rincón's elbow, well, twice, two yellow cards, and he got sent off. And then Brujo came on and took his place. And then in the final game against Paraguay, which we'll discuss in more detail later on, he was so-so. But Oscar Gonzalez couldn't really hold his head up. Soteldo did really well on the wing against Argentina. And then when I saw he was playing 10 against Peru, I was really happy. I like Soteldo in the 10, but he didn't play as well against Peru and actually looked a little bit lost. But for me, that Peru game was the worst moment of the three fixtures. Did it feel the same for you? Would you say that the Peru game was the worst of the three?
Yeah, well, first on the note about Oscar, yes, very impressed. Really held up, you know, probably his least impressive performance was the Paraguay performance, and I don't blame it, because the man had been asked to play just a ridiculous amount of minutes in comparison to a lot of the other players who had been purposefully or forcibly by other means you know, rotated. So yes, very impressed by him, and certainly a player that should be continued to be considered for, you know, future games, and you know, potentially maybe a move at some point at the club level. On the Peru note, yeah, it is the most disappointing loss. The most simple way I can probably put as to why was because it truly was a game that we lost for ourselves, and that Peru really in no way won by their own accord. So much of that game was taken up by just really poor mistakes from across the 11 and on Tejan's substitutes. The Rincon red card, you know, I'll say first that I don't agree with a lot of the negativity that surrounds him amongst some fans that, you know, kind of write him off as like an old, useless player. That's not true. And he still plays at a higher level than most of the roster at the club level. To people that claim that he's useless, he's this year or last year, maybe even next year, he'll have more minutes at a top five league level than most of our roster will have in their lifetime. So, I think it's important to keep perspective. He's talented. He's a good leader, but really silly the way he gave up those two yellow cards. Maybe there's a world where the ref could have taken it easy on one of those challenges, I guess. But at the end of the day, you have to be more aware of your body and what you're doing with it, especially when you're already on a yellow. And he simply didn't show those basic, that basic awareness in that match, and deservedly was, you know, sent off. That was really disappointing, and of course meant that we lost a leadership figure, a veteran, and a player that at times when he was playing during this break actually looked pretty okay, was making some good challenges, making some good movements, like pushing the ball up the field. So obviously that happens. And then the other aspect of this that just feels like we wanted, obviously we didn't want to lose, but it almost felt like there was some force just like making us lose for ourselves, was the goal, which was, you know, Villanueva just making a ridiculous pass. And that's a player that I like. We've talked about him on a recent podcast about how I think he's going to have an interesting club season, and had one last year as well. But just the most ridiculous decision-making in that moment, to play the ball the way he did to create the goal for Peru. For those that haven't seen, essentially a failed pass. I guess maybe he was trying to switch the ball to the right side of the field. That, or perhaps he was trying to find someone in the middle of the park, and just the ball didn't move the way he wanted it, but falls to Peru. Basically go one-on-one with the keeper immediately and score. Really sloppy moment. And again, it's the most disappointing loss, because it ends 1-0 off of a goal that it might as well be an own goal, at the level of silliness on our part that created it. And a loss motivated further by a needless red card by a player that should know better. As you mentioned, there were other players that, you know, really didn't impress with the opportunities they got. Soteldo looked, I believe he used the word lost. I'll agree with that, I guess. Didn't really seem comfortable in that position, which was strange, because normally I would imagine him being comfortable in that position. Ramirez was very sloppy from a striker standpoint. But Savarino, again, you had a really disappointing international break, unfortunately. And defensively as well, we turned over the ball a lot from the back line, from the midfield. And again, just constantly was making it harder for ourselves. It's the one game we didn't score a goal, so in that sense, you know, disappointing again that we didn't convert in any sort of way. And yeah, when you looked at it once it's all done and you see how the goal happened and everything, it's like, well, this was clearly the game that we could have won. Peru didn't play that well. They really only, like, before that goal, before the turnover goal, they had like one or two chances on target. One was like a header that Frinhas collected easily. Like, they didn't have an electric performance. If anything, I'd actually argue they didn't really perform well. But we just handed them opportunities, handed them reasons to take advantage of us. And it was probably the low point of the window, more or less, was just how easily we capitulated the game, and had almost like this defeatist mentality in the way the players were moving. I have no idea what was going on in their heads, but the way their bodies were acting, it just seemed like we were trying to write our own obituary.
Unfortunately, it's a perfect summary, really, and you know, so many minor details that I couldn't fit them all into my summary. Unfortunately, you did, but yeah, my God, that Villanueva pass was horrific. And you know, in the moment when he went off at half time, you're thinking, that's definitely punishment for that misjudgment. Later transpired that he, you know, has an injury. I don't know if that injury was the reason for him coming off. They didn't state. They just stated that he was injured, you know, the next day. But it was a real, real sucker punch of a moment, because until that goal went in, until Villanueva put it on a plate for Peru, I felt that Venezuela were doing okay. And many people said at full time, you know, play that game with 11 men and it's a different result. Again, I know that's a very easy platitude to roll out, particularly when Venezuela have played, at this point, played two, lost two, both times having a man sent off in the first half. It's just, you know, you can't write it, but it feels so familiar to Venezuelan football fans. But then if we go into that final game, Paraguay, and by then, in my opinion, it's do or die. I know you've already said today that you feel differently, but for me, win that game and World Cup qualifying hopes stay alive. Lose it and it's over. And I still now, you know, I stand by that. What you're saying is reasonable and rational. And of course, you know, things can change so quickly. But I just feel the ask is too tall, and losing to Paraguay, okay, that second goal coming so soon after half time was just gut-wrenching. And I just, that game was so, I was so despondent watching it, and I couldn't bear to record the podcast straight after full time. It was just heart-wrenching. But you know, I'm here bringing the emotion, but tell us in more detail what went wrong against Paraguay.
Yeah, both the goals for Paraguay rather, seemed a bit silly, although in different ways. The first goal is a great hit. It's a goal that looks really impressive on video, but then when they show other angles and you see the amount of space given and the lack of coverage for that entire sort of passing lane that that we gave, the amount of space that we gave, it feels a little less impressive. It feels more like we sort of left the runway open. But you know, sometimes that happens, and sometimes players hit the ball really well and it goes in. It seemed like we reacted relatively well to that, and that we improved after that point, and we seemed relatively positive about, like, well, we'll find something. And then, like you said, second half starts, and almost immediately there's sort of a misread of, I guess I'll say a misread of, like, the offside trap, whether or not we were literally playing an offside trap. But Ferraresi kind of doesn't seem spatially aware quite of where his man is compared to him. Perhaps to a degree that's also on the fault of the rest of the back line, but he's kind of the closest to the situation. Ball comes in off a cross, and he kind of makes a challenge for it, but just completely misreads where the ball's even going, and whiffs that completely, and it falls to Paraguay, and the Paraguayan player actually sort of mishits it, but it gets past Farinha's. It kind of trails to the far corner, and Farinha's just isn't able to get to it in any way. It was a really silly goal. It wasn't as, you know, silly of a mistake as the Villanueva situation and against Peru, but it still felt very, you know, how have we let that happen? How have we come out of halftime clearly, or I would hope, you know, having had a team talk of like, all right, we got to go out there, we got to do this, make a couple changes, and suddenly just have such a silly moment. That was really disappointing. And you know, once that happened, we kind of got back to the momentum we had at the end of the first half, but suddenly we were two goals down instead of one. Some of the attacking issues that I cited earlier continued. Players just not looking themselves. Hurtado had started the game ahead of Ramirez, due to medical concerns. And, you know, he looked okay, but never quite connected the way I think Gonzalez was hoping he would. And Savarino came off hurt at one point, hadn't had a great game prior to that. Soteldo, again, you know, wasn't necessarily looking his best. Otero started and was okay, but a lot of the problems we tend to have with him in terms of, you know, wasting free kicks and diving and all that stuff was still happening. So, you know, I'll commend that Gonzalez made quite a few changes trying to search for, you know, how am I going to get goals, but none of them really paid off. And the goal that does come eventually is from Chancellor, you know, off a corner kick, if I recall correctly, but it's a solid goal, and funny enough, he's one of our more consistent goal scorers this World Cup qualifying campaign. But, you know, I mean, he should be doing that. I mean, we should be scoring off corner kicks. We have a lot of height in our team, and it was too little too late. I believe it was in extra time or right before extra time. And, yeah, not enough. It ends 2-1. Couple moments towards the end where maybe an equalizer was going to be there, but it doesn't come about. And, yeah, you know, I think what was disappointing about that result was before the game, Gonzalez had made the point, I'm going to paraphrase, but along the lines of, well, we really haven't had a chance to see what this team actually looks like with 11 players for more than, like, an hour. And so now that, you know, if that happens today, you know, we'll see something different. And we did get that. We did get, you know, 11 players on the pitch the whole game. But it never really looked that much better than when we had 10. And maybe part of that's because players had to get moved around and Ramirez not starting and that sort of stuff. But I don't know if the 11 against Paraguay ever particularly looked better than our better moments against Peru or Argentina on the counter when we had 10. And yeah, it all ends feeling like was a real failure kind of with mentality and flow just in general with the group, that they never really got off the ground. They never really looked ready for the challenge. Some of that might be, you know, a lot of these guys aren't maybe used to this level of expectation or this level of challenge, but yeah, I do think a lot of players, not a lot, but there were a few players that I think damaged their legitimacy to play at this level in the short term, at least. I think there were a few players that maybe before this break we thought were ready or close to ready that just did not look ready at all. Some of these are players I like. I'll go ahead and say Eric Ramirez came off as one of them. That's a player we both like, a player we both talked highly about. But in the time that we saw him, which was probably less than he deserved, you know, early substitution against Argentina and so on. But, I mean, we saw close to a full game of him against Peru. And just the whole time he was on the pitch, he never looked confident, made a lot of mistakes. A couple times he like slipped on nothing, like just a lot of not great moments. And so assuming that like Rondon is going to be back in October, I think we might see a break for Ramirez in terms of serious contention for time with the team, especially if Joseph is healthy next month. So yeah, disappointing again, disappointing in a different way because it was more of a sort of normal match, 11-11, goals both sides, but sloppy moments. Admittedly, goals that were actually earned by the attacking team, but still just very sloppy, not taking advantage of time, not taking advantage of finally having 11 players. There's a lot of talk of, again, you know, well, we're going to have 11 players this time, but we didn't look that much better.
So towards the end of your breakdown of the 2-1 loss to Paraguay near Asuncion, you mentioned the return of Rondon, or the expected possible return of Rondon to the national team in October. And perhaps he is the last hope for fanning the dying embers of World Cup qualifying campaign back into life. Of course, Yangel Herrera should return as well. He's just joined Espanyol on loan for a season, which is news since the recording of our last podcast, a move right at the end of the transfer window. And he's another key player to return to the fold, as will Roberto Rosales in hopefully a full-time capacity. He He came on towards the end of the Paraguay game, but, you know, we'd expect him to be a key figure even at his age now in the national team. Alexander Gonzalez didn't do badly at right back. And of course, Ronald Hernandez is there as well. But both he and Hernandez can play left or right back. And although Oscar Gonzalez had a good triple date, it's possible that we see a return of Rosales to either the left or the right back role. Well, sobering, depressing and a harsh dose of reality for Venezuelan football in September and for La Vino Tinto, the national team. Three losses and three results that probably will be the sum total of Leo Gonzalez's time in charge of the national team, a role that he and his coaching staff have dreamt of for a long time, he said himself. If he gets October, it becomes no easier either. Brazil come to Caracas. But to recap September, a 3-1 defeat to Argentina, the Venezuelan goal scored by Jefferson Soteldo, who won the penalty and then dispatched it for a Panenka. The second game, a 1-0 loss to Peru in Lima. Again, a first half red card for Venezuela. First game was for Luis Martinez, the second game for Tomás Rincón. And in the third game, a 2-1 loss to Paraguay in Asunción. The Venezuelan goal coming courtesy of Brescia defender John Chancellor, who rose the highest to head home Soteldo's set piece. Thank you very much for joining us. And until next time, goodbye.